schedule following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
Welcome to Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, and this is our first broadcast and premiere broadcast. That's right. We're delighted to be here. Gonna flip the switch. There you go. Absolutely. That's correct. And joining us as our first guest is the Libertarian candidate for president, Michael Bednarik. Sir, are you with us?
I am with you. Thank you so much for having me on the air.
Very good. Thank you. And first, I'd like to start off with some people. You know, the site that we're on and others are basically geared towards the younger people, 18 to 30, and they may not be familiar with the Libertarian Party or who you are. I don't know if you want to give a description of the party and who you are.
Well, in any decision about your life, either you can make that decision or the government can make the decision for you. And the Libertarian Party is overwhelmingly in favor of you making your own life decisions. All of our platform is based on individual rights and personal responsibility. So you can do whatever you want as long as you're not harming someone else or damaging their property, but you need to just, pay the consequences of your actions.
Very good. And now, I listened to your acceptance speech when you accepted the party's nomination. I thought it was very touching. You went on your way to mention your father and your parents, and you're very emotional like that. I think that sets you apart from the other candidates. They're very scripted and very ice cold, or whatever word you want to term for it. Now, is your beliefs in politics come from your family upbringing, or?
Absolutely. I was lucky enough to have a very close family life. I have two younger brothers that I'm very close to, and my parents taught us to be self-sufficient, to think for ourselves, and to always do the right thing, no matter how difficult that may be. Integrity and honesty were the most highly valued qualities, and I think that I've been fortunate enough to embody those qualities, and that is some of the things that has given me the strength to pursue this particular campaign.
I think we're having a problem with Debbie's mic. No. Well, that's all right. And now, with everything that's going on with the terrorism and everything else, how would you try to make America more secure?
Well, one of the ways that I would try to make America more secure would be to not instigate additional terrorism. 92% of the people in Iraq consider us occupiers rather than liberators, and they don't want us there. Apparently, the American strategy at this particular moment is to blow up buildings and kill innocent civilians, and apparently they think that's going to improve the situation. Every time we blow up five terrorists, we probably inspire 50 more to join up. And the metaphor that I use is to imagine having a hornet's nest on your property. If you have a hornet's nest on your property, there's a small but finite chance that you'll be stung by a hornet. But if you go down with a baseball bat and try to beat up that hornet's nest to try to kill hornets, your chances of getting stung are going to dramatically increase, not decrease.
My question to you is, I was checking out your website, and I noticed the Libertarian candidates you're endorsing. One of them happened to have your same last name, the Lieutenant Governor candidate for Indiana. Is she related to you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's my mother.
Your mother?
She came to Atlanta as a delegate, and she participated in my nomination process. And the delegates in Atlanta gave her a standing ovation. They just loved her. And shortly thereafter, the Indiana Libertarian Party invited her to run as their lieutenant governor candidate against you know, two women who are running on the Democratic and Republican tickets. And, you know, she's participated in some candidate forums and has done some radio. And we haven't done extensive research, but to the best of our knowledge, this is going to be the first mother-son ticket, you know, combination on the ballot.
Wonderful. That's historic. I'm impressed.
I am too.
Good,
yes.
Good for you guys. Good for both of you.
Before we continue on, John, why don't you invite the folks to either call in or enter our chat room?
Chat room at lvrocks.com. And we're glad to field some questions for Michael Bednarik, the Libertarian candidate for President of the United States. And Debbie?
Okay. And then we understand that you are actually placing third in some of the polls as of today. How does that make you feel, not as just a candidate for your party that I think up until recently, I don't want to say lacked credibility, but certainly did not receive the coverage the other two parties received?
Well, I'm so thrilled that we are getting really significant coverage in this campaign. The media has been very good to us. We've been doing anywhere between 6 to 12 interviews a day, and the coverage has been very fair and balanced, I suppose. They've been quoting me accurately. They've been presenting my political views, you know, the way I would like them presented. And because of that, we are, you know, gaining increasing popularity in the various polls, either on the internet or done by Zogby. And we went to New Mexico with television commercials, and I did a week of personal appearances, and I was able to win 5% in the polls that were explicitly planning to vote for me, and an additional 5% that were now undecided. They were not sure whether they were going to vote for Bush or Kerry. So that was basically a 10% change in you know, the overall aspect of what people thought about the election.
Now, what's your opinion about what this deal with Iraq? What would you do? You know, would you do something, you know, the same as President Bush, or would you go along the lines of John Kerry? I mean, where do you fit in the Iraq equation?
Well, George Bush clearly wants to be your war president. He recently gave a speech at the United Nations indicating that we were justified using that force primarily to enforce a UN resolution. Originally, John Kerry indicated that he wanted to send 40,000 more troops to Iraq, and apparently he has flip-flopped again and now is condemning George Bush for being involved in Iraq. But I have always been of the opinion that the Constitution allows us to do national defense. It does not allow us to do international offense. We have no business running around being the policeman of the world. And if I were elected, I would bring our sons and daughters home as safely and quickly as possible.
Okay, back with the media. So why do you think the media is willing to give you the coverage this year, or the Libertarian the coverage this year, that they haven't in years past?
I don't know all the answers to that. I don't know. The Libertarian Party has been around for 33 years. We have been developing a strong base in all 50 states. And I think that my nomination allowed me to unify the party so that all Libertarians are apparently behind me, and volunteers are working very, very hard to initiate the contact. I think that I am able to continue the good media coverage based on some of my answers. One, my answers don't change. Two, they are concise and to the point and easily understood, you know, rather than usual rhetoric that people anticipate from politicians.
You're listening to Subject to Discussion on LVRocks.com. I'm Debbie Hall, along with my host, Sean O'Mac. And as our special guest today, we're going to be discussing the presidential election through the elections, a fair and balanced look. We invite you to participate. And, Sean, go ahead.
We have had an email from a guest, actually one of the bloggers, one of the libertarian bloggers. He told me to ask, what is your stand on immigration, illegal immigration?
Well, first of all, there are a number of issues with regard to immigration. And the first issue is that most of the people who have come here have come here to work hard, to do jobs that most Americans don't want, at wages well below what most Americans would accept. If it were possible to collect all these people and move them back to Mexico, the economy, especially those the economy in the southern border states, would either certainly would be adversely affected and may even collapse. So what we first of all need to do is recognize that we need these people here, and the only reason that they are illegal at this point is because it's much easier to swim across the Rio Grande than it is to climb the mountain of paperwork that we require. I think the better solution for that would be to reduce the amount of paperwork, you know, require a photograph, an address, and a phone number perhaps, so that we know where these people are, and make it easier for them to cross the border so it's not necessary for them to, you know, get smuggled in illegally. Because these people may be illegal, but they are definitely not, you know, doing any damage to anybody. Now, in addition to the people that are here to work, we also have drug dealers that are coming across the border. We have coyotes that are trafficking in human lives, again, because of this mountain of paperwork that makes it difficult to enter the country illegally. And I'm told that we also have factions of the Mexican military that are crossing the border, and these groups are damaging American property and actually killing American citizens. And rather than having 150,000 of our troops damaging property and killing citizens in Iraq, I think it's more appropriate for us to have those soldiers you know, doing what the government is supposed to do, and that is to protect American lives and property here in the United States.
So what stand do you take now on making English our official language?
I think that people have the freedom to communicate in whatever language they want, and the free market would be able to handle you know, education in all languages. However, the important thing is communication, and English has established itself as the language of commerce, and that is one of the reasons it makes it so easy for Americans to travel abroad, is because people have learned English in order to, you know, manifest themselves in the economic field. So while I certainly support anyone's desire to maintain their heritage, in fact, my mother is very strong in our Slovak roots. You know, I think that in order to make the best life in the United States, that English should be at least a very strong second language.
Now, as president, what would you do to help improve the economy? I mean, it's still having some problems. It's up and down. The gas prices are, the oil. Price of oil per barrel has gone up again today, and somebody on Fox says it could go up to $150 a barrel. What would you do to help, you know, turn the economy around?
Well, first of all, I would point out that fundamentally we the people created state governments to handle most of our issues, and the state governments got together to create a very limited federal government. And the only purpose of the federal government is to do the things that the state governments were incapable of, such as national defense, coining money, and operating the post office. So the federal government was intended to be extremely small. And every time we create a federal agency, we have to pay for the lights, we have to pay for the air conditioning, we have to pay for the people sitting around at those desks. And the government is very, very expensive. We literally cannot afford the government that we have right now. So the libertarian plan would be to dramatically reduce the size of the federal government, pushing all of that money back into the pocketbooks of Americans, and for a short period of time at least, Americans would literally have more money than they know what to do with, and there would be small businesses springing up like dandelions to provide new goods and services to raise our standard of living, and to and our economy would grow almost exponentially.
Now, do you believe President Bush when he claims, and I hate to phrase it this way, I just don't really, you know, it's supposed to be fair and balanced, and I apologize, but he has said that he's going to dismantle the IRS system. What is your feeling, and what would you do about our IRS?
Well, I believe it's Dennis Hastert is the Republican who proposes dismantling the IRS just prior to every election. And people get all excited, and they tend to vote for the Republicans because they want to see the end of the IRS. And shortly after the elections, you know, they say, well, I'm sorry, we decided that that wouldn't be possible. So, you know, when I hear the Republicans say that they plan to eliminate the IRS, you know, that's the same as the check is in the mail. As far as libertarians are concerned, we are very serious. We would eliminate the IRS completely. We would not replace it with a flat tax. And I like to point out that the Constitution was ratified in 1789. The IRS did not come into existence until 1913. And so we had well over 100 years with no IRS, no income tax, and the American government had more money than it knew what to do with. And one of the reasons that we had enough money is because the federal government was very, very small. The issue is not where are we going to get the money to fund all of these agencies. The question is, why are these agencies here? And, you know, should we still allow unconstitutional agencies to exist? And my answer is no. And, you know, rather than trying to collect more money, I would make the government much, much cheaper by making it much, much smaller.
Very good. Well, I do know that they're coming off this new nickel. I suppose they're going to have Thomas Jefferson in a profile, and supposedly it's costing almost $100 million to change his stance on the nickel, which I think is, that money could be used for better places. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You know, most of what the government does is inefficient. And as I said earlier, libertarians are overwhelmingly in favor of you making your own decisions. The government should limit itself to its constitutional chores, again, national defense, coining money and regulating the value thereof, and, you know, operating the post office. There's very little that the federal government is supposed to be doing.
Now, I'm curious, let us say that you do win the election. Obviously, the two houses or the two branches that you'll be dealing with, the Senate and the Congress, would either be Democrat or Republican, and certainly there would be problems there. How would you deal with that?
Well, first of all, I kind of reject the idea that I would be the only libertarian elected. If I get elected to the White House, it will be because the libertarian message is being heard by the American people. They understand what libertarianism can offer them, and they are going to vote for libertarians all across the ticket. And so I think it is far more likely that when I am elected, that there will be several libertarian Congress people elected. However, taking your hypothesis, even if I were the only libertarian elected, I would like to point out that in everyone's civics class, they learned that we're supposed to have a system of checks and balances. Right now, Congress will pass an unconstitutional act, the president will sign it into law, and the Supreme Court will misinterpret it. Essentially, you have no checks in Washington, and none of the branches of government are doing anything to protect your rights. As a libertarian president, I can protect your rights by promising to veto every unconstitutional law that Congress sends to my desk. And while it is possible that they could override my veto, I would have an opportunity to have a State of the Union address, explain what Congress was trying to do, why that action was unconstitutional, and to remind the people that I'm only the president. I don't have significant power. All the political power rests in the people, and it's up to we, the people, to contact their members of Congress and tell them to cease and desist. However, if people prefer to sit on the couch and do nothing about it, Congress will override my veto, and, you know, people will be saddled with yet another unconstitutional law.
You're listening to Subject to Discussion with me, Debbie Hall, and Sean O'Mac on LVRocks.com. We have Michael Bednarik, our special guest, where we're the next 7 weeks we're going to be discussing the presidential election, and not just the Democratic or Republican candidates, but all candidates and all issues. You're welcome to join us in our chat room. Sean, what's that chat room?
LVRocks.com. Actually, we do have a question from the chat room, sir. It's from Trench Work. He's asking about your stance on education and the No Child Left Behind Act that President Bush instituted.
Well, the No Child Left Behind Act should be retitled as the No Child Allowed to Advance Act. I am in favor of education. I've been a teacher most of my life, an instructor, and I am totally unwilling to support the Department of Education. In 1953, American students were number one in math and science. At that point in time, we invented the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, which eventually became the Department of Education. Over that 50 years of government control, we now spend over 10 times as much per student, and American students are now 29th in math and science. So even if the Department of Education were constitutional, and it clearly is not, we need to eliminate that department because it is so inefficient. The libertarian solution is to privatize education, allowing teachers to teach whatever they want, how they want, allowing parents to send their children to schools they want. The good schools will become profitable because everybody wants to send their children there. The bad schools have two choices, either become a good school or go out of business.
Now, my curiosity is about where you stand with gay rights, especially gay marriages.
Well, this is very simple. Only individuals have rights. Gays are individuals. Ergo, gays have the same rights as everyone else. What most of your listeners probably do not know is that the first marriage licenses in the United States were established to prohibit and then regulate interracial marriages. They started out based on racial bigotry because we certainly couldn't allow, you know, blacks and whites to live together because our society would crumble and our culture as we know it would come to an end. Well, that clearly has not happened. We have many different ethnic groups mixing in marriages. Culture has seemed to, you know, stand up just fine. And the attitude behind the Defense of Marriage Act is similar. You know, saying that, gosh, we couldn't possibly allow same-sex couples to live together because your society as we know it would crumble and our culture would come to an end. And that is not true. That's the same type of Chicken Little posturing that is just a different form of bigotry. And I would be embarrassed to know anybody that was strongly in support of such an amendment.
Another question from the chat room. Gunner is asking, what do you plan to do about the federal debt and also the debt's the highest it's ever been, right? Its projections have been lowered, but still it's growing. And then the national debt is, what, almost $5 trillion?
Well, the national debt is a very definite problem, and we're not going to be able to fix it easily. However, if you go to a hospital for surgery, sometimes you are so ill that the doctors refuse to do the surgery immediately, preferring to pump you up with antibiotics and get your health up just so that you're strong enough to survive the surgery. We have a similar problem with the economy. The first thing we have to do is get the economy moving. And by dramatically reducing the size of the federal government and pushing money back into the hands of Americans, they will then start spending more money and the economy will begin to grow. And at that point, we can start to address the national debt. I mean, it's not going to be pretty, but we need to start paying that off dramatically, you know, really tighten our belts. And because I'm smart enough to know that I don't have all of the answers, I would appoint Bernard von Notthaus as my Secretary of the Treasury. He is the originator of Liberty Dollar, and he knows more about the economy than I do. And he assures me that the problem is solvable if we are willing to address it and work towards that end.
Tell us a little bit about your vice presidential running mate.
His name is Richard Campagna. He is a college professor and a lawyer from Iowa City, Iowa. And he's fluent in five or six foreign languages and would be an excellent person to assist in repairing our reputation with other countries and helping us to correct our foreign policy.
Now, what do you think of the recent lapse of the assault weapons ban?
Well, I am thrilled that the assault weapons ban has lapsed. It is my... I believe that none of your listeners have ever filled out a government form that allows them to go to church on Sunday. When I ask people if they have a church permit, they look at me like I have two heads, because clearly a person doesn't require a permit in order to exercise a right. Well, I think that is true for all of the rights, especially those listed in the Bill of Rights, and I think that a concealed carry permit is just as ludicrous as asking someone if they have a church permit. As far as I'm concerned, 20,000 gun laws in the United States are unconstitutional, and if I can get my finger on the trigger, no one will ever get their hand on my gun.
I actually have a question. It's kind of going back to the immigration issue. And the chat room are asking, what would you do about illegal immigration? We covered that. And securing our borders. Would you bring the troops home and pull along? I think, going back to what Pat Buchanan said a few years ago, I think they should do some kind of secure those borders that make sure you're getting, you know, the people who don't have a criminal past coming into this country. What's your view?
Well, again, one of the things we need to do is we need to eliminate the welfare system in this country so that people are not motivated to come here to get free education, free health care, you know, free housing. And, I mean, I have no, bias against any ethnic group, but, frankly, I don't want to pay for anybody else's health care other than my own. So once we eliminate the socialist welfare state in this country, the only people who will be coming here are those that want to improve their own standard of living. And again, once we lower that mountain of paperwork that we require people to fill out in order to come to this country, then one of the problems with these coyotes trafficking in human lives and leaving people locked up in practically airtight trucks to, suffocate, that will go away. And, we do have a responsibility of protecting our borders, but it is impossible and totally implausible to try to keep everybody out or to let everybody in. You know, we need to have a rational criteria. We need to recognize that terrorists do not travel using a terrorist passport, and they don't have the word terrorist tattooed on their forehead. Terrorist is basically a mindset, a willingness to commit heinous crime, and you cannot tell whether someone is a terrorist simply by, looking at the way they dress or identifying their ethnic background or their religion. We had a terrible travesty in the United States during the World War II, when we rounded up all of the Japanese Americans and interred them in California. We literally put American citizens in prison based on the way they looked. And what was even more horrendous is that their children, many of their children, were off fighting for the very liberty that their parents were being denied. And we need to be very, very careful that we don't reinstate that same type of bigotry against people because of the way they look.
You're listening to Subject to Discussion with me, Debbie Hall, and Sean O'Mac. We'll be discussing the presidential candidates, the issues affecting the presidential election the next 7 weeks on LVRocks.com. We invite you to join us in our chat room. Our guest tonight, Michael Benarek, who is the Libertarian Party candidate. And Michael, my question for you is that we are broadcasting live from Las Vegas, Nevada. Nevada seems to be a, quote, swing state in the election. Will you be making a visit here sometime soon?
Well, you missed me. I was just in Nevada. I had a fundraiser in Reno and another fundraiser in Las Vegas. The Libertarian Party in Nevada is growing stronger because of the excitement and enthusiasm surrounding my campaign. And I don't know if I'm going to have the time to return to Nevada before the election. However, we have already visited 41 states since the beginning of January, and we are working very, very hard to get into the presidential debates, which is really our focus at this point. I will be traveling to Miami, Florida, to debate David Cobb of the Green Party, Michael Perutka of the Constitution Party, and Ralph Nader on September 30th. We will be across the street from George Bush and John Kerry when they are in the official presidential debate. But I would like to publicly challenge George Bush and John Kerry to allow me to participate in their debates. I believe the American voter has a right to hear all of the issues so that they can go to the polls in November and make an educated choice. And I would like the voters to realize that Henry Ford once said that you can have your car painted any color you want as long as it's black, and that is not a legitimate choice. The Democrats and Republicans are currently telling you that you can have any president you want as long as it's Bush or Kerry, and that is also not a legitimate choice. And just a few days ago, we selected Miss America from over 50 candidates, and I think that the presidency of the United States is important enough for people to have a selection of more than just two candidates, especially when those two candidates are so similar on the issues.
True, absolutely. I just don't understand why they're not paying more attention to the other candidates. It's just, you know, Ralph Nader's fine and everything, but he kind of reminds me of the guy from One Hour Photo.
Oh yeah,
Robin Williams' character, and you just you look presidential. You know, Bush and Kerry, of course, he should have just dropped out, and I just think he'd be in a lot stronger position if he hadn't been in there.
And unfortunately, it also shows the state of Nevada media, because Sean and I were looking at each other when you said, "Well, gee, I was here," and Sean and I both really stay on top of the news, and it shows how, you know, it wasn't a blackout, but you certainly, your a visit to the state, which is truly a swing state, wasn't even covered.
Well, we are doing the very best that we can with the resources that we have. People are welcome to visit my website at badnarik.org. That's BADNARIK.org. They can look at all of my positions on the issues. They can sign a petition urging, the powers that be to allow me to participate in the debate. And if they truly believe in liberty, they are also welcome to contribute to the campaign so that we can broadcast the commercials that we have produced to kind of overcome this lack of media attention that we have.
And also the enormous cost. How do you feel about putting a cap on the cost of the campaign? Because right now you have to be a multi-millionaire to run.
Well, I don't believe in putting a limit on people's freedom of expression. However, I think that individuals have freedom of speech and that individuals should be allowed to contribute to campaigns. I just think that we should make that fairly public so we know who is contributing to which campaign. However, corporations do not have freedom of speech. They do not have freedom of religion. Corporations are artificial entities that are not flesh and blood, and I do not believe that corporations have any authority to contribute to presidential campaigns. And the Democrats and Republicans frequently get large contributions from corporations who contribute to both parties, indicating that it is not an ideological preference, that these corporations are merely greasing the skids for whoever does get into office so that our members of Congress and other forms of government will be willing to pass laws that are preferential to that particular industry.
Now, what do you think about the draft? I mean, a lot of people are saying that Bush may have no choice, or Kerry, when they get in to reinstitute a draft, or like that backdoor draft they're doing, they're reactivating servicemen that have already left the military. What do you think of that?
Well, from a libertarian perspective, anytime you are forced to do something against your will, that is slavery and involuntary servitude. And I agree that George Bush has no choice. It is purely unconstitutional to force people into the military and, you know, potentially send them to other countries to die. The only way that we should be protecting the United States is with a voluntary military, and I personally believe that if people are not signing up for the military the way they used to, that is a indicator that socially people do not support the actions that we are using our military for. So, you know, when we had, Pearl Harbor and people thought we were being attacked, people ran to the Selective Service Office. There were people lying about their age, indicating they were older than they really were, so they had the opportunity to serve in the military. And I've spoken to many people who are in the military, and they themselves do not want a draft because they do not want to be, you know, on the battlefield, you know, standing next to somebody who does not want to be there. You know, they don't feel that they can actually trust someone who you know, has reservations about fighting. So as a president, a libertarian president, I would you know, veto any plan to reassert the draft.
Let's talk about women's rights, especially a woman's right to choose, certainly a subject that concerns me personally. And where do you stand?
Well, abortion is a very divisive issue, not only the general population, but also the members of the Libertarian Party are divided on this issue. This is one of the few issues that you know, we have significant differences on. The Libertarian platform is based on the assumption that every person owns his or her own body. And from that assumption comes the conclusion that a woman owns her body, and that is certainly not my position or the federal government's position to tell that woman what she can or cannot do with her body. And therefore, the current Libertarian platform is pro-choice. However, you know, just less than half of the Libertarian members believe that at some point in time, the baby also owns its body. The baby certainly owns its body after birth, but perhaps the baby takes ownership before that. And at this point in time, this is really a property rights debate, with everyone arguing that their definition of the beginning of life is the obvious true answer, indicating that life either begins at conception or when the heart starts beating or when the brain starts functioning. And, you know, unfortunately, we have not come to a conclusion socially, you know, and culturally about which of those answers is true. I do not claim to be smart enough to know the answer, and I certainly would not subject my opinion on anyone else. So this is certainly not a federal issue. We certainly shouldn't be spending federal money on abortions. I don't believe that it is a state's rights issue. I believe this is an individual rights issue, and everyone who is faced with that decision must agonize over that decision themselves.
Well, going into that, I have one more question that piggybacks. Late-term abortions, what is your stance?
A late-term abortion?
Yes, a third trimester abortion.
Absolutely not. I don't know anybody personally who supports that.
Very good. Looking at the United States in totality, what do you think is the biggest domestic issue facing the country?
Well, probably the economy. We are our economy is really terrible, in spite of what you know, people in Washington are trying to tell us. We are exporting jobs and manufacturing. That is because we have too much government regulation. NAFTA and GATT are supposed to be free trade agreements, but they're not free trade agreements. What they do is they create a hostile economic environment in the United States that raises the cost of doing business and severely cuts into the profit margin of a company. And in order to stay solvent, companies will move their jobs and manufacturing to other company or other countries, rather, that don't have regulations and make it a little bit cheaper to produce their goods and services. And so these countries, these companies, are not transporting their jobs and manufacturing offshore, you know, just because they are un-American. They're simply trying to survive. And the best way to keep those jobs locally here in the United States is to eliminate the regulations, which, you know, make it difficult to do business cheaply.
You're listening to Subject to Discussion with Sean O'Mac and me, Debbie Hall, where we'll be discussing the issues affecting the presidential election, as well as interviewing various presidential candidates, not just the two, Republican or Democrat, on LVRocks.com. You're welcome to join us in our chat room. Tonight's guest for our premiere show, Michael Benderek, and he is the candidate from the Libertarian Party. My question to you, since we are discussing the economy right now, is what is your stance on minimum wage? Would you do away with minimum wage? Would you raise it? How do you handle that question?
Well, basically, libertarians want what everybody else wants. We want everyone to be able to make a decent living and to be able to provide food and shelter for their children. However, the minimum wage does just the opposite of what is intended. If you have someone working at $5 an hour and the government decides to raise the minimum wage to $7 an hour, that doesn't guarantee that people are going to be getting, you know, more money in their paycheck. Companies have to operate at a profit. And if the government arbitrarily mandates that you spend, you know, pay your employees more money, if you cannot afford it, you, rather than continuing to pay that wage and go out of business, you know, you basically eliminate the job. So the choice is not between $5 an hour and $7 an hour. The choice is really between $5 an hour and being unemployed. And so, ironically, minimum wage laws actually create more unemployment, which is just the opposite of what is intended.
I have a question from PA Libertarian. They ask, do you see the Libertarian Party grabbing a foothold within the next few years? I see it really is going to take off. What do you think?
I think that 2004 is the year the Libertarian Party becomes an overnight success. We have been campaigning for 2 years. We have had so many people come up to us and tell us that they are disenchanted with the Republicans, they're disenchanted with the Democrats, and they are actively looking for a third party. At the same time, the Libertarian Party is stronger and more unified than it has ever been in its history. And I believe that we are going to shatter the 1 million vote ceiling that we have been struggling against for 33 years. I'm not willing to predict how much of a percentage we will get in November's election. But I think that this is the year the Libertarian Party becomes an overnight success. I think this is the year that people realize that if you vote for the lesser of two evils, you still get evil. The only wasted vote is when you vote for a candidate that you do not respect.
And that's a great point, because now my question to you is, how do you see the people coming out to vote? Do you see an increase in voting? Because I know the campaigns are out there to promote people to vote, especially the 18 to 30-year-olds whom we are targeting this show towards. Do you see an increase this year?
I don't know. I don't have my finger on that pulse. I spend most of my time doing interviews and traveling from city to city. I have a staff that plans the strategy, and they are doing a lot of polling to see, you know, what people's attitudes are this year. But just from an anecdotal point, I think that people are frustrated. They voted for the lesser of two evils in the last election, and after 4 years of the current administration, I think they've come to realize that that's a really bad strategy. The Star-Spangled Banner ends by declaring that we are the land of the free and home of the brave. And those two things are not independent. You cannot be free without also being brave. And I think that people should be brave enough to vote their conscience and not take the coward's way and vote for the lesser of two evils.
That's what I've said. I said, this election, I'm telling everybody, vote for someone, not against Bush, or vote not against Kerry. You gotta vote for someone. That way, you cherish that vote more. If it's, you know, I'm part of a wrestling promotion here in town. I'm telling these kids, you know, they're all just disgusted with the race, with Kerry and Bush, with this Vietnam nonsense. And I tell them, go out there, look at everybody. You know, just vote for. Don't vote against somebody, because it's not right. Just, yeah, it's your right to vote. Vote for someone.
And also, I think a lot of people get concerned because, let's say, for example, somebody wants to vote for you and they're thinking, but he's not going to win. He's not the Republican or Democratic candidate. We're urging you to vote. Make a statement. Don't think about winning. Make a statement.
Well, imagine for a moment that you are in prison and you have a 50% chance of lethal injection. You've got a 45% chance of the electric chair, and you've got a 5% chance of escape. Are you likely to vote for lethal injection simply because it's the most likely outcome?
You
or are you going to vote for escape because that is your only chance for survival? Well, anyone who votes for the Democrats or the Republicans is committing political suicide. The Democrats and Republicans are both going to raise your taxes. They're both going to continue the war in Iraq. They're both planning to restore the draft. They both plan to continue passing unconstitutional laws like the Patriot Act. If you want to vote for liberty, you have to tell Washington that you're tired of the status quo. The only wasted vote is when you don't vote for what you want.
true. I just wish you had Ross Perot's money to throw into this campaign. It drives me nuts because I saw there were Bush and Kerry have at least raised $250 million and spent all that money as well. Here you are. You're a good man. You're trying to do what's good for the country, and I just,
Well, your listeners can certainly help me solve that problem. They can go to my website and contribute.
Bednarek.org.
Bednarek.org. And if they would like to see someone who has got honesty, integrity, and who's studied the Constitution for 20 years and realizes that the Constitution puts limitations on Congress, then you need to express that opinion. Tell your friends, tell your coworkers, tell people on the street that you've never met before. Call our office at 800-807-7552 and ask for bumper stickers and yard signs. We can send you flyers. Word of mouth advertising is advertising that I really couldn't buy.
True. And the internet as well. I mean, that's why we so much appreciate you coming on there. The internet's so powerful this year in the election. We saw Howard Dean use it to success.
Send all your friends an email. Give them a link to my website. Mm-hmm. Tell them that you've heard me on the radio and that you think that I'm really, talking the way the founding fathers wanted to organize this country. The worst thing that anybody could do is sit on the couch and continue watching TV and just let the problem continue to get worse.
That's why I told people, tell your friends, tell your enemies, just tell someone.
Yes.
Right? And to closing, do you have a few remarks you want to make to the people listening?
Do I what?
This is the last. We're going to let you go because I didn't realize we kept you about 17 minutes longer than we had to. We appreciate you being patient. Is there a final statement you'd like to make to the people listening?
Just mostly to visit the LP.org website, find out more about the Libertarian Party, compare that to what you see the Republicans and Democrats doing, and make a rational choice. Do not waste your vote by voting in fear. Have the courage to vote for what you want. That's the only way you're going to get it.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure. And congratulations on your new program.
Thank you.
And thank you for your staff. Your staff's been very wonderful, and it's great to deal with the bunch of professional people who are nice and they're very understanding, which
yes.
we appreciate. So
thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a good night, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're listening Thank you. You're listening to Subject to Discussion with Sean O'Mac and me, Debbie Hall, on LVRocks.com. We invite you to join us in the chat room. We'll be discussing issues affecting the presidential election as well as talking with the various presidential candidates. Our special guest for our premiere show, Michael Bednarek, who is the candidate from the Libertarian Party. And this
was.
You can call. Now we can call in.
866-LVRocks, or if you're in Las Vegas, 1-702-383-8120. And I just thought that was very inspiring.
It is.
I posted a message in the chat in the message board that I've been a member of ever since, like, every party known to man. You name the political party, it's no party I think I've been a part of. He and the Libertarians, they have a little bit of both, the Democrats
right.
and Republicans, but it's common sense. And I like that he's a crusader for the Constitution. Because I saw Robert Byrd, he was speaking, Hillary Clinton introduced him as somebody. His book came out, a book signing in New York, and he's not one of the crusade. He carries the Constitution in his pocket. He gave Hillary one. So I think she burned it
or something.
I just like that. I mean, the Constitution is kind of a piece of trash,
right?
Kind of thrown away, and that's the governing issue, document of our country, and we got to bring that back.
Along with that, as well as, like he said, this was never created to be just a two-party system. This was created for candidates to run. We just somehow fell into the two-party system. The media has latched onto the two-party system. And look at, again, Nevada gave no coverage to this man visiting the state.
The media here is a joke. They were a cover of a volcano exploding on the strip. That
right.
was some serious issue. But honestly, and he's a good man. I've been studying his website, and the Libertarians, I wish he had Ross Perot's money.
Oh, yes.
Because I tell you, like I said, Nader, to me, he's a good man. He's done
yes.
the country. He's done the seatbelt thing and whatever, the mm-hmm. and all that stuff.
Right.
But he needs somebody who looks presidential. I mean, he looks like the guy from one-hour photo. I mean, he looks like he's about ready to... I don't know. There's something about him. And then I've seen Mike Bednarek on his acceptance speech and everything. And just his mother about his...
Oh, I know.
The lieutenant governor. So we got to
Oh, great. Hi, caller.
Yes, I want to say congratulations on your new show. Fantastic first interview.
Oh,
thank you. Who's this?
This is the Metal Master.
Thank you. You like Mr. Bednarik?
Yeah, I did. The reason why I enjoyed this so much was because I'm really disappointed that the debates are only going to be the two candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to hear everybody. I want to hear Nader. I want to hear the Libertarian Party. You know, I want to hear everybody running for president. I want to hear their point of view because everybody deserves to be heard.
Sure.
And especially since the taxpayers are funding this election.
Amen.
System.
Yeah, that's what I understand. We're paying for this stuff, and then the Democrats and Republicans freeze out everybody else. I mean, it's our money going into paying for this. And then, of course, you got some corporate sponsoring. They're sponsoring the after parties and all this stuff. And I think Britney Spears will sing a song or something. I don't know.
Really?
I mean, they got to do something to bring people to these things. And but I had an idea. Well, all the other third-party candidates go across the street to the undebate.
Yes.
Undebate across the street. I think you get more of a crowd there than you do for Bush and Kerry.
I agree.
What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Bush and Kerry aren't going to bring anything new to the table at these debates. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the same rehashed election catchphrases.
Yeah, well,
basically what the debates come down to is a popularity contest. Mm-hmm. Would you rather drink a cup of coffee with George Bush or with John Kerry? And that's basically what it's come down to. I've been very disappointed, especially with television. Of course, if you go back to the Nixon and Kennedy debate, mm-hmm. where the people who heard it thought that Nixon had won, but the people who saw it on TV thought that Kennedy had won.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And I think that kind of shows you kind of how shallow it's become. You know, it's basically a slick production, who looks the best, who can smile, who's the most personable. And, that's just not what it's about. You know, it's about the future of this country, and there's a lot of huge issues out there, and I want to hear everybody's ideas.
Yeah, I think he gave some pretty good ideas. I mean, going back to the Constitution, I think is something that's been forgotten for the last 20 plus years that I can think of.
And, I agree.
I agree, but I think part of the problem with that is people generally vote for the person who's putting money in their pocket.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay, and that's a bit of the fault of the electorate.
Mm-hmm.
This group wants this stuff. This group wants that stuff. Everybody, wants their own. Everybody wants to cut the pork barrel programs, but their own.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like you had mentioned, big money is a big, big part of it. I mean, obviously corporations can afford to give, lots of money to the candidates, and that really kind of cuts the little guy out, like you and me, in this process. I mean, we can go out and vote. We can campaign for people. We can, make our opinions known. But the bottom line is it's controlled by money, and I think as long as the current system is in place, it's going to be very tough for any of the third-party candidates to get heard, because both major parties, they work together on one thing, and that's squeezing everybody else out.
Oh, so true.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to move on to the next caller. All right?
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Bye.
And,
our next caller? We did? Oh, well.
I want to get to some stuff for you, because we have about 5 minutes.
Okay.
And I hit about the illegal immigration and all this stuff, because there's a bill that's starting to float through Congress that's sponsored by Dana Rohrabacher. He's a congressman from California, from Utah, Orrin Hatch, I think it is. They're trying to get a bill running through that will stipulate, it'll change the Constitution, they'll allow an immigrant that's living in the country for a minimum of 20 years to run for president. And that's for Schwarzenegger.
Yes, of course. I was going to say.
I don't believe that.
No.
Happened to go through whatsoever.
No.
You know, you got to be born in this country to be president. I want to see him. I mean,
God bless him.
In the State of the Union.
Yes. Right.
To be the president of the United States. Is that too much to
ask? No, not at all. And especially with Arnold, let's face it, he's just a pop icon. He won the election because he was so familiar to the voters.
True.
Had really nothing to do with, his stance on the issues. No, I couldn't agree with you more on that one.
Yeah, let me see. What else?
The
battleground.
Okay.
They have the electoral votes. They need 270 to win the presidency. And as of right now, thanks to MSNBC, they have it at Bush at 220 electoral votes and Kerry at 200. And let me see here. How many states there's solid? Doesn't say. I thought I had the right one. But, it's tight. But it looks like Bush is starting to pull out.
Oh, he is. Yes.
Kerry. And Nevada's still up for grabs. So is New Mexico, Oregon. So California, of course, is in the bag for Kerry. But,
still close, but I don't know. There's a feeling that, and actually, they have we best trust to handle the campaign against terrorism. Bush leads 57% to 43%.
I'm amazed.
That's pretty telling right there.
That is, yes.
And of course, this week we had the speeches.
You did.
They can hear their speeches. Kerry spoke at the New York University, and in his speech, he said that he said allies should be pressed harder to provide troops training, cash, and training for the security forces. Bush has no strategy; he does. And then Bush spoke at the United Nations, and he urged the world to come together and fight radicalism and terrorism. And he acknowledged what happened in Russia with those poor kids in the school. And he's also proposing, but nobody's getting this money for all this,
yes,
starting a democracy fund within the United Nations. And it's going to promote democracy and independent courts and, you know, yada, yada. And the United States, of course, would put money in, of course.
Right. Now, before you, I'm curious about where you got your information, because you have newspaper clippings.
Yes,
are those from the local papers or from?
Actually from the, actually just from the Las Vegas Sun.
Okay.
It's not local writers, it's from the Associated
Press. Okay.
And this is the Kerry items from USA Today.
So. Got it. Okay, well, I was just curious because, you know, we do have LA Times, Washington Post. We certainly have the internet where we can check, you know, newspapers across the country,
sure,
to see the kind of coverage.
But, and the race has been really tight. I mean, they have in three polls, I see Bush is 47, and Kerry's 46. And then you have somebody who's 12 points up. You know, it's crazy. I mean, they have,
yes,
they have 55% compared to 42% for Kerry. I mean, they're all over the board, these polls. And I think the debates are going to make or break it. But if I had to say right now,
if the election was held today, it would be Bush. Now, remember, it can always change.
The last couple of days,
yes.
The always tend to go against Bush.
Right.
The family's got to cry, and they go against them. So, so we'll see about that.
We have 6 weeks until the election.
6 weeks
until
the election.
Yes, and then we'll have our wrap-up show the day after the election. Yes, Sean. Yeah, you registered? No. Uh-oh, we got somebody. Yes, you can leave now. But Sean, I'm disturbed. You would even ask me such a question. Okay. Well, you know what they are doing though to register people, which is wonderful. They're in front of supermarkets. They were at the San Gennaro feast. They're everywhere to register to vote. It's really, really easy.
Yes.
We're looking at our engineer and telling him that. Yes. Is it that time?
He is.
Right.
You have an STD, don't you? Subject to discussion.
What? The name of the show is STD. Should I wrap up? No, I'll wrap it up. You've been listening to Subject to Discussion, better known as STD, on LVRocks.com with Sean O'Mac and me, Debbie Hall, where we're discussing the issues affecting the presidential election, as well as interviewing presidential candidates from all parties, not just Republican or Democrat. Join us next week, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Pacific time, on LVRocks for STD, Subject to Discussion. That's how you wrap up.